morning there with them. And then Brother Buddy was doing the invocation at the noonday service, noonday celebration for the Martin Luther King event. And so I gave him a ride back to that so we could get a good parking place, and we watched the parade end up. And so here we are pushing 12:30. It's been 6 hours since I had breakfast, and I'm getting hungry. And the only food in sight are the hot dogs are given away. Well, hot dogs are not on my menu. And I looked at those hot dogs, and for a moment I thought to myself, I can't have one of those. I can't have one of those. I can't have one of those. But then, I don't know where, well, I know where it came from. I believe the Lord whispered something into my ear. Well, maybe I shouldn't give Him too much credit. Let me say it, then you decide. I changed my mind. And instead of saying, I can't have one of those, I said, I don't want what that will do to my body. So I changed from I can't have it to I don't want it. And when I made that little bitty change of phrase from I can't have it to I don't want what it will do to me, instead of me being the victim, I can't have it, I became the victor. I got in charge. All of a sudden, I was in control of my situation, my destiny, my circumstance, instead of it being in charge of me. I'm just a poor guy. I can't have it to, I'm in charge of this situation. I choose. We didn't eat lunch till about 3 o'clock that afternoon, but it was okay. Well, I was sharing that today with Mom and Dad and Shanna and Dad said, you need to preach about that. That'll preach. So I said, okay, I'll work on that. When I came back and began to study, I said, Lord, how am I going to preach about that? Is there anybody in the Bible who was a victim when they could have been a victor? Well, I was drawn to John chapter number 5. I want you to go with me there to look at the story of a man who was living in the hood. That's going to be the title of the sermon tonight, Living in the Hood. But where do you find out what hood he was living in? In John chapter 5, verse number 1, it says, after these things there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is in Jerusalem by the Sheep Gate a pool which is called in Hebrew Bethesda, having 5 porticos. In these lay a multitude of those who were sick, blind, lame, and withered, waiting for the moving of the waters. For an angel of the Lord went down at certain seasons into the pool and stirred up the water. Whoever then first, after the stirring up of the water, stepped in, was made well from whatever disease with which he was afflicted. A man was there who had been ill for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had already been a long time in that condition, he said to him, do you wish to get well? And I'm going to stop there for a second. It seemed like an odd question. You know, in fact, your teachers will tell you in school there's no such thing as a stupid question, but this almost seems like, well, I won't say it's a stupid, but it just seems odd, doesn't it? I mean, what kind of question is that to ask of a man who's been ill for 38 years? I even wrote in my Bible, not tonight, but some time ago, I have a sentence here, I mean, I have two words, odd question. It's always perplexed me. What are you doing asking a guy, do you want to get well? Have you ever noticed when people ask those obvious questions? I hate it when reporters ask obvious questions. You know, they ask the guy who catches the touchdown pass in the Super Bowl, how did it feel when you caught that touchdown pass? It felt good. You know? Or, you know, you'll see them interviewing someone, maybe they had somebody broke into their house or someone tried to abduct them, they would ask them, were you scared? Well, no, actually, I was rather on the light side of the day. I mean, sometimes questions are so obvious, and you think, why did you ask that question? And I'm not picking fun at Jesus. Obviously, he knew what was going on a lot more than we do, but it seems obvious. Why are you asking that? Could it be that Jesus knew more than we did? Now, you're going to have to allow me some supposition room tonight. I'm going to go far and wide with some of my thoughts, some possibilities about the scenario here. I'm not going to give you the Hebraic background of this because I don't know it. I'm going to leave Brother Buddy do that for you. But I want to just give you some thoughts about why I think this guy was living in the hood. I think some people don't want to get healed. I think some people don't want to get well. I think it's possible Jesus needed to ask the question because he knew that some people don't want to get well. Any Monty Python fans here? You're too embarrassed to raise your hands if you are, aren't you? Like, what? Well, in Monty Python's the Life of Brian, he's got a scene in there called The Ex-Leper. And the scene is, there's this, you know, these people, the character, Brian, is walking through this with this area with somebody else. And there's these alms for the poor, please give alms for the poor, alms for the blind, alms for the lame. And then there's a guy standing there, says, alms for the ex-leper, alms for the ex-leper. And everybody's like, I mean, he's like, what do you mean alms for the ex-leper? He said, well, you know, I used to be a leper, but now I'm not a leper anymore. I haven't been a leper for 6 years. Well, how did you not get to be a leper? Now, this is where it really gets crude. Well, Jesus healed me. Man, why did he come along and heal me? I had a good thing going on. I was getting, you know, I was getting taken care of. I was getting my money coming in, and I was being all this stuff. And he come. I didn't ask him to heal me. Why did he heal me? Now, see, I'm 6 years later. I'm still begging, but now I got no reason to beg. Now, I know that's very sacrilegious, or somewhat sacrilegious, but the guy who wrote that was making a point. Some people don't want to get well. Some people enjoy the attention. Some people enjoy the opportunity. Let me ask you to be honest for a minute. I want you to think back to when you were a kid. How many of you here were ever a kid before? Anybody? Anybody ever a grandchild? Were you ever a grandchild? Just checking. You remember when you didn't want to go to school because maybe you hadn't done the homework you were supposed to have done or studied for the test, and so you decided to tell Mama you didn't feel good. Oh, Mama. Mama comes in there. I don't feel good. What's the matter, baby? Is it your stomach? Oh, yes, ma'am, it's my stomach. Do you have a fever? Yes, I think I got a fever. Well, here, take this thermometer and stick it in here. I'll be back in a couple of minutes. Now, my way of doing this, I'm looking to see if Mama's here. My way of doing it, one time, she gave me the thermometer. She left the room. I ran in the bathroom, got a hot, heated the water real hot, put a washcloth underneath it, ran back to my room and put the washcloth on my face. I had stuck the thermometer under the hot water, put the washcloth on my face, and when she came back in, I said, I don't feel good. She pulled out 107. Well, here's what I didn't count on. She felt my head. She went, you're burning up. Yes, ma'am, I don't feel good. The thing I didn't think ahead about was she felt my hands. My hands were just like regular, you know, and she touched my arm, and my arms were regular, and she's like, something funny. This thermometer's broken or something. You can't get away. But I didn't want to get well. I didn't want to get well, right? Or how about that time? I'm sure no one here has ever called in sick because you wanted to go fishing or spend some time with your wife. We're making a noble call, spend some time with your wife. You know, if you called in sick and told the boss, I'm just not feeling good today, you wouldn't really be excited if he showed up with a miracle cure at your door. Right? It wouldn't be, you know, if he knocked over the, by the way, I think I bought the brand new miracle cure. It's going to fix everything you got. Thank you. See, some people don't want to get well. So the question Jesus asked isn't necessarily such an odd question. Some people are not necessarily interested in getting better. I read a story about a man one time who was having trouble doing things around the house that he used to do, and his wife was really concerned about him, so she said, you know, you really need to go see a doctor. So finally, he goes and sees the doctor. The doctor gives him a thorough examination, and when he's through, he comes in with the diagnosis, and the man says, Doc, just tell it to me straight. The doc says, well, I'm going to tell it to you straight. You're just plain lazy. And the guy says, well, can you give it to me in the medical terms so I can explain it to my wife? Why? Because he wasn't doing things. Some people don't want to get well. So I think it's a valid reason for Jesus to ask, a valid question for Jesus to ask. And let's go back to this guy. Let's talk about his life in the hood a little bit. All right? We're going to talk about the hood that he lived in. It's generally assumed that this guy was paralyzed, although it doesn't state it in Scripture specifically. But we're going to work on the assumption that he was paralyzed. And it begs the question, was this man a victim, or is he living his life as a victim? Let me say the question, the two questions. Was this man a victim, or was he living his life as a victim? The reason those are important, there's an important distinction there, is because the first question says, did something unfortunate happen to him at some point in his life? Yes. 38 years prior to this, something had occurred in his life that victimized him at that time. But the second question says, he continued to live victimized by that event throughout his lifetime. See, here's the deal. You know I like to make up words, right? Here's my new word. He lived in victimhood. He lived in the hood. Victimhood. You see, I think that this guy must have made a choice at some point to not just have the one... He didn't choose the one-time experience 38 years ago, but he chose to live in that hood all of his life. And, you know, I remember a high school teacher telling me one time, son, you can be a victim one time, but you don't have to be a victim forever. You may be a victim the moment it happens, but you're not a victim for the rest of your life unless you choose to be. Did you hear that? Unless you choose to be. It's like me standing there looking at that hot dog. I made a choice. I chose not to be a victim to it. I believe being a victim or living in victimhood is a choice that we can make. I believe this man may have possibly made that choice, which is why it was important for Jesus to ask him the question. Do you wish to get healed? Do you really want to be well? Being a victim, many times we are victims. Victim is what happens to you, but victimhood is the result of the choice. It's a choice that you make. It's a choice of where to live. It's a neighborhood that we choose to live in. It's a place that we surround ourselves with reasons to be the way that we are. And it's very popular nowadays. There are lots of folks that are living in the hood. People are blaming their genetics. They're blaming their upbringing. They're blaming their moms. They're blaming their neighborhood. They're blaming their school. They're blaming their culture. They're blaming their government. They're blaming their religion. They're blaming everything possible, when in reality, what they need to do is look at moving. They need to call U-Haul. I just made that up. I thought it was kind of cute. Call U-Haul and get out of the hood. All right, so let me ask this question. Why be healed? I think there's several reasons why people don't want to be healed. Let me just give you four reasons why some people choose to be victims. Number one is that the victim receives care and attention. The victim receives special care and special attention. I remember in high school, this is going to be a very painful confession for me to make, and I hope that you won't hold this against me, but I love attention. I know that surprises you. It's a great shock to some of you. I told the chapel this morning at Grace, I love attention. I had 300 eyes peeled. I love that. Well, there was a time in high school, sometimes you do crazy things. Teenagers, we're not surprised because we did crazy things too. Don't try this at home. I was marching in the band. I was the tuba player. There were three tuba players in the band, and I was the first chair tuba player. Quite an honor, first chair tuba player. Whatever. So we have our halftime show, and of course we at Pineville High thought we were the best band this side of Gabriel's Horns. I mean, we thought we were God's gift to music. And we could march circles around every other band. Peabody, ain't nobody. That's what we would say at the day. Those of you who went to Peabody, sorry. No, I'm picking at you. He finally came back and graduated from Pineville High. Good man. But we thought we were the great band. We thought we had it all together. We loved to march. And I look back at my pictures now. I looked so goofy. I used to have this red beret I would wear. Me and a beret, it just doesn't work. But at the time, I thought it was cool. You know, it's kind of like, you got the green berets, you got the black berets, you got the red berets. Tuba players. Oh, well. Nevertheless, one time we were playing a halftime show. At the end of this particular song that we sang, we had a routine that everybody stand their attention, you're belting it out, and you're playing your note. And I used to love, my band director was a John Clement, he was a trombone player. He loved low brass. And during practice, he would always be like, give it to me, low brass! Give it to me, low brass! Blow, blow, blow! And so I'm, boom, 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 blowing my tuba for all I can. At the end of the song, the routine is that everybody falls down. Randomly, just all over the place, the whole band acts as if they passed out. Blow! We fall down. And so I'm laying there, falling down with my big old tuba, that I got down. And I don't ask me why, but in that moment I concocted a way to get some attention. I didn't get back up. Everybody else got back up, And I lay there as if I had torn my anterior crucial ligament, my ACL or whatever. And I'm laying there going, oh, oh, my leg. Oh, oh, I'm laying there. I'm sorry, folks, but I did this. They send the football trainer over to me. The coach comes over to me. The band director comes over to me. The drum major comes over to me. The ambulance people come over to me. Now I've bitten off more than I can chew. And at some point, I think it became obvious to them that I was faking. Because by the time they got me up on my feet and I hobbled all the way around that track back to where our band was sitting, by the time we got back there, nobody was with me. What's the matter with these people? Don't they care anymore? Well, then I really, my mind was like, I'm really hurt. Nobody cares about me. And why? Because victims crave attention. Enjoy it. I wish I'd told that story about somebody else, but it really was me. It really was me. Don't try this at home. Man. Some people enjoy the attention so much that they stay in the hood. The next reason that some people don't want to be healed is, especially dealing with things that they bring on themselves, is that if they stay in the hood, then their self-destructive behavior is concealed. Their destructive behavior is concealed. As long as they can stay in the hood, their destructive behavior is hidden. There's a lot of folks who deal with depression or who deal with addiction this way. I heard some folks say it like this: I drink because I'm depressed. I'm depressed because I drink. It's this vicious cycle that brings me down and yada, yada, yada. You can put all, whatever you want. You can put eating too much. You can put smoking, gambling, drug, whatever it is. But this cycle that masks the destructive behavior, that takes away the responsibility, it's not my fault. You know, really, it's this big whirlwind of thing that's going on around me, and it's just not really my fault. I'm a victim. I live in the hood. I also believe that some folks don't want to be healed because living in the hood can help you avoid dealing with some of the fundamental issues of life. If you live in the hood and it's somebody else's fault, then you don't have to take responsibility. You don't have to face up to relationships. You don't have to deal with core values. You don't have to deal with the very true, intrinsic, important things about life, because it's always somebody else's fault. We're fixing to read more about this guy in a second. And then the last reason I think some people don't want to be healed is that victims feel justified in not taking responsibility. A victim, just like the guy I told you about a while ago, that he couldn't help around the house because, you know, as he got older, he just couldn't do the things around the house that he used to could do. And the doctor's diagnosis was what? Not just lazy, but plain lazy, right? Well, as a victim, oh, I just can't do this. All right? He didn't have to take responsibility. In this guy's situation, I want you to think about this for a second. If Jesus were to heal him, all of a sudden he would have to, on Monday morning, get up and go find a job. Now think about it. You go knocking on the door, hello, I'd like to apply for a job. Okay, well, let's take a look at your resume. When's the last time you worked? 38 years ago. 38 years without a job. Okay. Do you have any skills? Well, no, not really. I'm really good at laying down. Okay. How are your people persons? Well, I don't know. I didn't take a bath in a lot of that time. Of course, I was at the sheep gate. It really stank there, you know, sheep droppings and all that other stuff. So I never really got around other people too much. Okay, maybe you get hired and then you get laid off. And how do you deal with that? Or the worst scenario is you get hired and you get overworked and underappreciated. And, you know, I mean, this guy would have to take, all of a sudden, if he gets healed and he gets a job, he's got to pay taxes. He's got to take a responsible role in society. He's got to not have somebody handing them the cup and taking care of the daily needs. And some people live in the hood because they don't want to face responsibility. Jesus asked some simple words. Do you wish to get well? Six words. Six simple words, but they speak volumes. Do you wish to get well? Even though he asked that question 2,000 years ago, I can almost hear the question today being asked of people in their victimhoods and the hoods of the day, asking things like, do you want to be made well? Do you want to lose your bitterness? Do you want to be forgiven? Do you want that relationship to be mended? Do you want that addiction to stop? Do you want to grow up? Do you want a new life? All questions that can be asked in the same vein of, do you wish to be healed? And it may seem obvious, the answers may seem obvious, it may seem like an unnecessary question, but they're not, because choosing to be healed, choosing to respond to this in the right way, takes you out of the hood. The hood's comfortable. It's easy to live in victimhood, if that's what you've known for a long time. All right, let's move on towards how this guy got out of the hood. I want you to look with me at verse number 7. I want you to see, first of all, the man has a little bit of concern. He shows his hoodness. Verse 7 says, "The sick man answered him, 'Sir, I have no man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred, but while I am coming, another steps down before me.' Jesus said to him, 'Get up, pick up your pallet, and walk.' Immediately the man became well and picked up his pallet and began to walk." Now it was the Sabbath on that day. You know what? It almost, to me, this man's first answer almost proves that he lived in the hood, victimhood. Jesus says, "Do you wish to be healed?" And it seems to me that the question, the answer to that question is yes or no. But if you live in the hood, the answer is, well, it's not my fault. Do you see the answer saying, not my fault? Well, it's not my fault I'm not healed. It's not my fault. There's always other people who get down there faster, or they have somebody to help them, or it's somebody else's fault that I'm living here. Don't look at me. Don't ask me that question. I want you to think about this. If the guy had been going there for 38 years, don't you think he might would have figured out, you know, if I lay a little bit closer to the pool, I might just be able to get me in one of those prime spots on the edge after somebody else gets healed. I can scooch over a little bit every month. You know, in 38 years, I might just get there. Water, boom, roll over. Do you wish? It's not my fault. I live in the hood. Thank you for laughing. It makes me feel really good. I appreciate that. Give them some sugar. You know what? It seems like he is demonstrating. But then Jesus says something to him that is pointed and is direct and cuts to the core of the issue. He didn't say what some would have expected to help somebody out of the hood. I'll help you get out. I'll you know, here, let me pack your bags for you. Here, lean on me and we'll hobble over together. Now, I'm not saying there's no need for help and folks that need healing, but it's interesting to me what Jesus said. You is implied. You get up. You pick up your pallet and you walk. That second person pronoun, you, is implied in every one of these instances. But he says very directly and very plainly, you get up. Take up your pallet and walk. Let me point out a couple of things, just three observations about steps to wholeness or steps to healing, steps to moving out of the hood. One is that if you want to be healed, you need to look for healing in the right places. This man for 38 years had been looking for healing at Waters. And there came Jesus walking through the crowd, the healer, the creator. I don't know how often the angel came down and moved the waters. I don't even know that maybe that was just an old custom. Interestingly enough, those words are not found in the original manuscript. They're supplied later on to help us try to understand what's going on. I don't know. Did the angel come once a month, once a year, once every 25 years? Maybe he came once every 40 years and the guy was 2 years away from it. You know, no, because he had seen other people being healed. I don't know. But sometimes people look for healing in places that they won't find healing. Looking for healing in all the wrong places. Have you seen people look for healing in places other than Jesus? Haven't you known and maybe experienced looking for healing in something else? This will satisfy me. When I get this, when I achieve this, when I have this, this will satisfy me. This will meet that longing in my life. This will make me happy. This will make me complete. And then when we get this, well, you know, all I really need is that 7.29 upgrade to this. Once I get that 7.29 upgrade, then I'll really be happy. Then I get the 7.29 upgrade, and it's like, well, you know, gosh, this made me happy for a while, but what I really need is that remote control. Once I get that remote control plus the 7.29 upgrade, then I'll be really happy. And you find yourself going, you know, Sonny, once I get that voice recognition, then I might be happy, because you've been waiting all your life trying to get something else to make you contented or healed or whole. And Jesus is right there. He's the one that can heal. People are looking for a magic pill. You know what I found out about magic? I used to love magic. I still kind of like watching it. But you know what I found out about magic? It's deception. That's what magic is. It's deception. David Copperfield makes a jet disappear on national TV. How does he do it? He seats a bunch of people on a stage that when the curtain goes up, things, loud music plays and things happen and the whole stage rotates and they drop the curtain and you're looking out over the bay. Oh, the jet's not there anymore! Wow! Smoke and mirrors. Well, those magic pills are just as delusional and just as deceptional as that. But Jesus does not deceive. So real healing is not going to be some quick fix or some magic pill or, you know, go to this meeting, get this specific. It's listening to what Jesus says. When Jesus speaks to you, get up. You get up. You pick up your pallet and you walk. Second thing that I think is important is that for us to be healed, we have to cooperate with that healing process that Jesus is doing in our life. What I mean by that is if Jesus had said to that man, get up, take up your pallet and walk, and if that man had continued to lay there, healing would not have been realized in his life. We have to cooperate. We have to obey. We have to respond. You think about people who get... Sometimes God heals instantly and miraculously, phenomenally, dramatically. And sometimes God heals slowly and subtly and deeply. If He's moving us from a place of brokenness to a place of wholeness, we need to cooperate with His instruction on moving out of the hood. I'll give you a real practical example. A guy goes to the doctor. Doctor says, well, you know what, you got some heart problems, let's run this dye test. They run the dye test, they come back, doctor looks at the x-rays, he says, you know what, your arteries got 50% blockages. Four arteries have 30% blockages, two arteries have 70% blockages. Let's keep it down around 50. You don't have to have surgery yet, but here's what you need to do. You need to eat, you need to cut out cholesterol. You need to lower your cholesterol. You need to cut out fats. You need to do some exercise. You need to start walking. If you'll do these things, we can probably avoid surgery. It will help you. And the guy goes home and he orders double Whoppers. And he eats 16 eggs for breakfast. And sits on his couch all day long because the doctor said, I'm going to die. Well, he's not cooperating with the direction God gave him. I give you an example of my life. I know I can begin to tell when I'm getting run down. And my wife is really good at it too. And she'll say, you need to rest. And what I have found God to do and be so faithful to, if I will listen to her and do what she is indicating, which the Lord's really saying, if I will get some rest, I will be rejuvenated and I will be energized and I'll be able to go, 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 go. But if I keep pushing that envelope and I don't cooperate, I'm going to crash and burn. So we need to cooperate. Jesus said, get up, do this thing. get up, take up your pallet, and walk. The third thing is just real simple. We need to understand that Jesus is the source of all healing. Now, I talked about lots of things tonight about healing, about wholeness, about being a victim in lots of different areas and choices that we make. But something really dramatic happened in this man's life. He left from this place and he went on his way walking with this pallet over his shoulder. The problem was is that verse 9 gives us a little bitty subnote, and it was the Sabbath on that day. And he walks through the temple on the Sabbath day with his pallet on his shoulder. That's almost as bad as walking through the sanctuary with a Coke in your hand, let Brother Buddy catch you. Has it happened to you? I'm kidding. It's a bad thing. The Jews are upset. And they say to him, "What are you doing walking with a load on your shoulder through the temple on the Sabbath day? First of all, you're not supposed to carry anything on the Sabbath day. That's work. Secondly, you shouldn't do it in the temple if you're going to. If you're going to do it, go out in the woods and hide where nobody can see you. But you're in the temple where everybody can see you." And the man's still flirting with the hood. "It's not my fault. The man who healed me told me to do it. I'm serious. Look. Verse 10, so the Jews were saying to the man who was cured, "It's the Sabbath, and it's not permissible for you to walk, carry your pallet." But he answered, "He who made me well is the one who said to me, 'Pick up your pallet.' Well, it's not my fault. When me, sorry, hey, I still like the neighborhood a little bit. I still like victimhood a little bit. You see that? Can you see? It's not my fault. Don't do it. Don't look at me. No, not my fault. Not my bad. I'm good. Somebody else's fault. I think I might move back to the hood. You see that?" So they ask him, "Who's the man who said to you, 'Pick up your pallet and walk'?" But the man who was healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had slipped away. While there was a crowd in that place. I guess there was a crowd when a man who had been crippled for 38 years picks up his pallet and starts walking. But here's what I want you to point out. Here's what I want you to see. Afterwards, Jesus found him in the temple, and he spoke some more instruction to his life. To me, it's almost like a warning saying, don't go back to the hood. Look at it, verse 14. He said to him, "Behold, you have become well. Do not sin anymore so that nothing worse happens to you." Don't move back to the hood. Don't have that attitude. Don't allow that to come back into your life. You've gotten the opportunity of a lifetime. You've got a ticket out of the victimhood. Don't go back. And of course, the man went away and told the Jews it was Jesus. Now he knows who it is. But all healing comes from Jesus. All healing comes from Jesus. In our day and age, there are so many people who struggle with issues. And I'm going to tell you what, we have the opportunity every single day to move into the hood. Monday morning, I had the opportunity to live in the hood. 11:30, 11:45, when I looked at that hot dog, and I wanted that hot dog, but I couldn't have that hot dog. I can't have it. It's not on my diet. It's pitiful me. I'm living in the hood. Victimhood. Thank you for laughing. The Lord gave me a one-way ticket out. He helped me by saying no. It's not that I'm a victim. It's not that I'm not in. It is that I choose. I don't want what that does to my body. I know that doesn't sound incredibly spiritual, but I believe it's something that will help us live. How shall we live? Was a great question asked. Well, one of the ways is to not live in the hood. Folks, we all have junk that happens to us. Every one of us. Every one of us does. And we can choose to settle down in the hood, put our stakes down, pitch our tent, and put up our flag that says, "I'm a member of the hood, the victimhood." Or we can listen to Jesus saying, "Get up. Don't stay there. Pick up that pallet and walk." Participate with Him cooperate with Him in His healing. Understand that we don't look for healing in all the wrong places. He is the source of every good thing. Father, thank You tonight. You desire that Your children be whole and be healed and be enjoying lives of wholeness. Help us to not live in the victimhood. Help us, Father, not to be as Eve or as Adam, who said it was somebody else's fault, it's not mine. Help us, Lord, when we are faced with these sins or these issues, these situations that want to make us stumble, not to throw the guilt or the blame at another, but to say, Father, I'm sorry. As the man, as the prodigal son said, I have sinned against heaven and against You. When we acknowledge that guilt and we acknowledge that responsibility, I believe that You will hear and will forgive and will restore. So Lord, tonight, help us all to move out of the hood. In Jesus' name, amen.